Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Totally 80s, the podcast dedicated to the music of the greatest decade ever. So turn up your Walkman, loosen that scrunchie, and get ready to talk 80s with your host, Lindsay Parker.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Parker from Yahoo Entertainment and Sirius XM Volume, and welcome to another fabulous episode of Totally 80s. Since we're all at home, why not take a second to follow us at Totally 80s on Facebook and Instagram, or email us your comments and show ideas to podcast@totally80s.com. You can also check us out on video on our Totally 80s YouTube channel, so check that out if you are so inclined. And if you're watching us right now on the video, I'm waving to you right now. Thanks for watching. So joining me today, as always, is my partner in all things 80s, the other John Hughes.
What is going on, Lindsay? I've been prepping for today's episode.
Your whole life.
My whole
life. Yeah, it's not, I don't actually feel like you probably had to do too much research for this one. I don't think our guests will have to either. We are going to be talking about divas of the 80s. The 80s were a good time for the ladies. It's going to be ladies' night here at Totally 80s. And our special guest today to talk about 80s divas is, I can't think of someone, you know, when I was trying to think of who'd be a guest, this was absolutely top on my list. He is a celebrating musician, DJ, and humanitarian whose new album, Fun City, hit number one on the UK dance chart, along with number three on the UK independent album chart. And he is open for the following people: Elton John, Erasure, Ellie Goulding, and on topic with what today's theme, Cher. And that new album, Fun City, features a whole bunch of guest appearances, including Jake Shears, Andy Bell from Erasure, and again, staying on topic, Nikki Harris and Donna DeLore, who are the iconic backup singers for Madonna's Like a Prayer, Vogue, late 80s, early 90s era. So he is absolutely an expert in this. In real life, he goes by the name of Rod Thomas, but you guys may know him better as Bright Light, Bright Light. So we are happy to welcome Bright Light, Bright Light, aka Rod Thomas, to Totally 80s.
Hello, thank you for having me. I actually just had to stop a glorious 80s record on my record player to do this song. Podcast. So it actually finished on the last song just before I had to sign in. So Perfect. Very serendipitous.
Grace Jones, one of my favorite 80s divas and my favorite Bond girl.
Oh, the most iconic Bond girl, like just completely amazing, isn't it? Like wild. And my favorite vampire, I think.
Yes. My favorite pretty much everything. Well, I'll cut to the chase. Is she your, I was one of the questions I was going to ask, and we'll get into all the great divas of the 80s, but is that your number one?
You know what? I find an 80s diva really hard to whittle down to even a top five, because it's just an excellent decade for strong female pop, disco, electro, fusion women. Like it's there are so many strong figures and so many incredibly inspiring solo artists and front women from that era that it's so difficult. She's definitely my favorite like catalog artist, I think, from early to late 80s. Like I can't fault really any of those records, especially the one that she did with Nile Rodgers, the Inside Story, my favorite.
Oh yeah, I'm not perfect. It's great.
So good.
Yeah. I always loved that line. Like I remember hearing that line when I was a little kid. I think I saw the video on MTV. Mm-hmm. I'm not perfect, but I'm perfect for you. And
yeah,
I'm like,
so
that's
good.
A badass line to say.
Yeah. And it's such a slam as well, isn't it? It's like, I'm not perfect, but you don't even deserve that. So I'm fine for you. So good.
She was great. But let's actually, I agree with you, Rod, that the 80s were a great time for the ladies to shine. But I'd like to set some parameters about the term. Let's define what diva means, because, you know, over the years that term has taken on a negative connotation. That's a woman who's quote unquote difficult or high maintenance, or has a bad attitude or is a bitch or whatever. And that, I feel that's unfair. I'd like to really reclaim the word diva. What is a diva, and what differentiates a diva from just, you know, a female artist or a female pop artist or whatever? Is it the vocals? Because, you know, we think of the Whitneys, or getting into, you know, the 90s, the Mariahs and the Celines. But then, you know, if you see I'm wearing a Madonna shirt, my number one diva, and I absolutely consider her a diva, is Madonna. But I mean this with absolutely no shade. Madonna's, you know, claim to fame wasn't that she was a powerhouse singer. She's a good singer, but she's not a Whitney, you know? Mm-hmm. So what makes a diva a diva?
For me, it's like iconic moments, whether that's a vocal performance, a song, something like a catwalk runway look, a collaboration, a cultural moment, which could be something from, you know, the girly show, or it could be Grace Jones appearing in a TV commercial, or it could be like France Jolie stepping in for Donna Summer on Fire Island when Donna Summer pulled out. It could be Aretha Franklin recording a song with George Michael, and he never recorded anybody else's songs from scratch, but they did that and it was a huge number one. It could be Janet Jackson just releasing like an incredibly powerful social justice record, which also happened to be a gigantic pop record. I think it's like going beyond just the person and going beyond just the song. It's something that like flicks a switch culturally that more people were aware of than were aware of just that artist before it happened.
I think that's a good way of putting it. I for some reason wrote down, I think if you're not a diva if you don't have at least one song that could be lip synced to on RuPaul's Drag Race.
That's a good category. That's a
like if drag queens lip sync to you on Drag Race, or even just, you know, in drag clubs at Mickey's and West Hollywood, or if you're on that like playlist of drag queen lip syncs, particularly if you have one iconic song that is going to make the place erupt, then you're on the diva list.
Yeah,
that's why Stacey Q is a diva.
She is a diva. She really is a diva.
Is Samantha Fox a diva? Because people might.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's tears.
And throw drunken karaoke in there. If you can do Naughty Girls Need Love too, then yeah, you're a diva.
Well, there's obviously an amazing song. Yeah, but there's obviously tears here because we're like, you know, we just mentioned like Grace Jones and Aretha Franklin and Samantha Fox and Stacey Q all within the same couple minutes. So obviously there are echelons, and we should probably start at the top. Who would you say? I think we should kind of start with Madonna, because we've done actually a whole podcast for Totally 80s just about Madonna. So for further listening, go check that out on totally80s.com/podcast. But I think that's a good place to start because of the fact, Rod, you had Nikki and Donna from a really very important era of Madonna's career sing on your album Fun City. So, well, first of all, why don't we talk about what made you bring them in, and then we can kind of get into that era of Madonna, that Like a Prayer era, that end of the '80s is such an important era for her.
So the reason I got them in was I was making an album that I wanted to fill with inspiring people from the LGBTQ plus world, but also bearing in mind that plus, which is, you know, like the A, LGBTQIA, and the plus, where it's people who push really hard as allies, which I believe Nikki and Donna did explicitly and implicitly through all of their work with Madonna. And they really embody for me like the kind of like 80s, 90s crossover of like the Shep Pettibone and the house dance scene into like mainstream chart success. Incredible, like iconic diva stage presence. Even the backing singers were divas, like wild, right? And then that Nikki went on to be the vocalist for Snap, and Donna's gone on to do so many different projects. Donna also lended her vocals to horror movies in the 80s, which I'm a very big fan of, like trash horror. So she was on my radar on another level. And then I was making this track, and the producer, I got this guy Initial Talk to remix this a cappella, basically, that I sent him. And he made it sound so much like New York in the early 90s that I thought, like, who could I get as a guest that would be a perfect fit for that? Nikki and Donna. And they were up for it. So yeah. And I think Madonna is a great starting point for this 80s diva, because she was, I'm actually 2 weeks younger than her entire music career. I was born 2 weeks after her debut single came out.
After everybody or after holiday?
After everybody.
Yeah, you know, when you say debut, I know you have the knowledge that you're referring to everybody as her, as her debut single. Well, yeah, so your careers flourished. You know, you evolved together. But I mentioned at the top of the show that you're a DJ, and you do whole Madonna sets, right?
Yes.
I tuned in for one on Twitch, I believe.
Yeah. So before quarantine and everything was locked down, I do like a weekly party in the East Village every week. It's a Saturday, 3 till 8 p.m. Every so often, I would do one artist only. And I did a couple of Madonna ones and did some in Brooklyn as well. A couple of Mariah, a couple of Kylie Minogue, and a few like George Michael and a few others. The Madonna one, the attendance was, each time it was wild. Like there were queues around the block at like 3 p.m. People would come in, they would be like singing like Supernatural lyrics. They would be singing like, you know, Till Death Do Us Part, like screaming when like...
I'm so happy you brought up that song. That's actually one of my favorite songs by her.
Oh, it's so good. I can't believe that wasn't a single and Dear Jesse was, honestly. I can't process that fact. maybe you retroactively talk to people at Rhino, I think, John, and like try and work that out.
I wish I was at Sire back in the day. I had
But that was a top 5 UK single.
It was, I believe. Yeah, Dear Jesse was top 5 in the UK.
Top 5. Also, Erotica was Christmas number 3.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
I know. We go deep here on this podcast. So what's your favorite Madonna non-single?
Time Stood Still from the film Next Best Thing. I think the film is absolute monstrosity. Mm-hmm. But that song, I think, is really one of her finest ballads. I think that was William Orbit as well. It was really cool. Sorry, it's not 80s.
What would be your favorite 80s deep cut?
Oh, Ain't No Big Deal. Amazing.
The whole first album. Sorry.
Ain't No Big Deal. It's really such a good song. I can't believe that didn't make the album cut. That's awesome.
Right?
I'm going to go with Till Death Do Us Part, though. It's like, obviously, amazing. Madonna's evolution from 83 when the first album came out, which had such a huge impact on me. I mean, look at me. It still does. How many chains am I wearing around my neck right now? Mm-hmm. I just remember seeing, you know, the album cover, even before I really knew she was, because, you know, I heard Holiday first. I heard Holiday before I heard Everybody. And I didn't, you know, it was on the radio and we didn't really know what she looked like. To be honest, I actually thought she was a black artist when I first
Everyone did. Everyone thought she was black.
Were they trying to market her that way? Yeah, or not so what she looked like?
She's not on the single sleeve.
Yeah.
It went to black radio first. So absolutely.
Okay. So I wasn't alone. I don't know why I thought that. I don't know if it was the sound of her voice or whatever local radio station was playing her. Cause I do believe they might've been playing her on the R&B station in LA, like K-Day or whatever. But I didn't know what she looked like until I saw the album cover, and she had, you know, tuft of blonde hair. And actually the first time I actually saw her was the Lucky Star video. I've talked about this before. The Lucky Star video on IRS Is the Cutting Edge. That was the first time I saw her. And then I saw the album cover with, you know, all the jewelry and her class beater face and all the, I just was like, this chick is badass. And, you know, like, it's weird to me that when they marketed her, they wouldn't have marketed her right away with strong imagery, because she's such a fashion icon from the beginning. Nope.
The marketing was all over the place at the beginning, because, you know, you saw it on IRS as the Cutting Edge, which was about independent artists and
punk artists. That's why I thought she was that. She was actually in her own way.
And I first saw the video for Burning Up. That's where I saw where she's, you know, she looks like, I was going to say she looks like Kylie. Kylie looks like her later on. And out of my head, she's got the same white hoodie kind of thing going on. And we've talked about this on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. Video was like, you know, it was almost rock. So they didn't know what they were doing, or maybe it was by design. Who knows? They were trying to hit everybody.
But yeah, but then by True Blue, she's sort of doing kind of like a 50s Marilyn thing. And then by the time Like a Prayer comes out, which has Still Death Do Us Part, to bring it back to that, that's actually like the first record where I think people who were still doubting her staying power had to stop doubting and had to be like, okay.
Yeah.
This is a career artist.
That single, Like a Prayer, I mean, that's just such a nuclear bomb of a track, isn't it? Just like, you can't believe that somebody like her, given all of the kind of like controversy and like, oh, she's just like a pop girl that's like not really doing stuff. And then she drops that and it's just like, oh my God. Like,
Yes.
Like, and it's amazing.
And that she was brunette. I was like, oh my God, she's not the blonde ambition woman is not blonde. But actually, I think Blonde Ambition, I can't remember the order. Blonde Ambition came a little bit afterwards, right? But we knew her as this blonde bombshell. And then she, like, you know, had looked different, you know. And obviously, she's someone who's kept us guessing throughout the 90s and the 2000s. But one thing that I have sort of realized, especially from covering American Idol as much as I've covered, it's like all the pop girls who came after her get compared to her, and are like when Britney comes out or whoever comes out, it's like, you're either one of the two, you're either the next Madonna or you're the next Whitney. If you're like a big power singer, you get compared to Whitney. I'm talking like when the 90s and the 2000s came. And if you were more like the sexy pop woman, it's like, but there's only one Madonna and there's only one Whitney.
You were there at the time. Rod's way too young to remember this, but when Madonna came out, it was Madonna and Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There it was like, who's going to have the lasting power? And Lindsay, you probably remember everybody's money on Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah. I mean, it pisses me off in general why the media feels the need to do that with women. They did that with Britney and Christina in the 90s. Mm-hmm. They even did it with, like, I remember when Lady Gaga and Katy Perry came out around the same time. You know, they obviously do it with people like Nicki and Cardi B. They do it all the time. But yes, in the 80s, Madonna and Cyndi Lauper's albums, if I'm not mistaken, came out the same year or within a year of each other.
83, yep.
And they were both very different, both definitely divas, but very different. And I think because, well, you know, like, technically Cyndi Lauper is a better singer. Like, that's a fact. Like, she's just, Cyndi Lauper's a powerhouse singer. Madonna is not. But I think the fact that maybe Cyndi Lauper wasn't sexy, like, selling herself, being sexually driven, having the sexuality out there, was not Cyndi's thing, while Madonna was like rolling around the floor and, you know, scantily clad and in her underwear. You know, Cyndi Lauper was, she's so unusual, and she was like weird, and she had like the, you know, she was cutesy. And
by the time they tried that with I Drove All Night and Hatful of Stars, it's a great song, top 10 hit, number 8. But, you know, you see the video where she's naked and, you know, she's kind of covering herself. You're like, oh, Cyndi, what's going on here?
I think she was naked in the True Colors video in some kind of silhouetted situation. Yes. But anyway, her thing wasn't. So, yeah, the critics were sort of like, oh, Cindy's the, you know, the real artist, and Madonna is the flash in the pan, and, you know, call us in 20 years. And they both ended up having a great career. You know, Cyndi Lauper is a Tony winner. Cyndi Lauper won Best New Artist at the Grammys. I just interviewed Cyndi Lauper the other day. I almost cried. I just couldn't even believe I was talking to her. Both of these women meant a lot to me growing up because, I mean, like I said, they were both very different, but they both basically, not to sound all cliched, but taught us it was okay to be yourself. You know, Madonna taught me it was okay to be sexy, not in a way, both of them basically taught me it was okay to be yourself, not for the male gaze. Like, Madonna was sexy, and of course, guys liked her for that reason. A lot of guys didn't, though. I don't actually remember being in school and having a lot of guys say they thought Madonna was hot, because she was threatening, you know, and she was kind of scrappy and kind of a street urchin in the beginning. You know, she got more glamorous later, and no one thought Cyndi Lauper was hot, you know, and I'm sure she didn't care. But I just loved her. I mean, I have, like, my mom, like, make plaid pants for me, you know. She, like, went to the, she, like, and I just, you know, I wanted a prom dress, and, like, I was, like, raiding my mother and grandmother's closets for, like, 50s outfits and stuff. But the one thing I remember that's kind of funny, when Cyndi Lauper first came out, one of the things that, you know, I just like the fact that, unlike, I love Madonna for my own reasons, she's my number one, but, like, Cyndi Lauper was leading with the whole, like, quirky thing. Like, her album's called She's So Unusual. She was, like, hanging out with wrestlers, you know, and there's the video for Time After Time that I almost will cry if I even start talking about it, where she has to, like, leave her small town and leave her boyfriend because, like, she wants to be her weird ass self, and, like, you know, no one accepts her that way. Like, you know, the scene, there's a lot of scenes in 80s music videos where someone takes off a hat and someone's upset about the weird hair. There's Amy Mann in the Till Tuesday video. But when she takes off her beret and she's got, like, the stripe, the shaved head, Cyndi, and the orange hair, and her boyfriend's like, what the hell? What have you done to yourself? So she leaves and she gets on the train, and I'm, like, sobby, and I still, like, get emotional seeing that video. But she was, I love the fact that she led with her quirkiness. But I do remember being at the orthodontist waiting for my turn, and I was reading like People or Us Weekly or something, and there was like a little profile on her. She was like, grossest one at home, was just getting big, and it said she was 30 years old, and that blew my child mind.
I was older, yes, for sure.
Cyndi Lauper is old,
yeah,
but actually, it didn't bother me. I was like, oh, she is like Iona in Pretty in Pink, you know, she's like someone who's old, meaning over 30, who's gonna show that when you turn 30, you don't just like roll over and die and start shopping at Chico's, you know? So like, mm-hmm. I just loved her. And she could sing her face off.
You gotta be honest though, and it's interesting we have Rod here because he can give a perspective. Has it aged well? Because I know every single Cyndi Lauper song from the 80s. You probably do, but I don't know if younger people know. Sorry, Rod, I keep calling you younger.
They definitely know Girls Just Want to Have Fun, and they definitely know Time After Time.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I don't know.
What about Chebop, masturbation song?
If I threw Change of Heart at you, you'd probably go, what?
But then, no, like, I know them. I know them. Oh. But like,
you know everything.
Do kids, like the new generation of kids, know? They don't know Chebop. It never gets played anywhere. I've never heard it in public other than when I've DJed it.
Do you have a theory as to why? I mean, like I said, both of them, and both Madonna and Cyndi Lauper, in this fake battle that was created, you know, ended up having very respectable careers. But I guess if you're declaring a winner, Madonna won by a lot.
Well, she just had bigger hit singles, didn't she? You know, Cyndi's chart performance stats for like singles were very up and down, especially in the UK, but like Madonna's were all top five, I think.
I also think the production plays a big role in it. Madonna, you know, while there's sequencers and things, it still sounds somewhat timeless, whereas the Rick Chertoff production on the Cyndi Lauper stuff is very much 1984. It's very much 1985. You hear those gated snares, you hear those sequencers bopping along, and you're like, oh, I know what year this is.
I have a theory. It was the wrestling. It was wrestling. So she was ahead of her time, because we all love Glow now. We're all very sad. Glow's fourth season on Netflix got canceled. And I was watching, John, I'm sure you too were watching the original actual Glow in the 80s. Yeah. But like, Cyndi Lauper was already, like a lot of 80s artists actually, kind of skirting that line of novelty by how her videos looked and how she dressed and how she was kooky. And as
the Goonies are good enough.
Well, that's, yeah, but yeah, I bet actually Rod has some thoughts about her Goonies theme.
Not really. I don't ever think about that song.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway,
it was again number 5.
Was it?
Yeah, and you're like, how did songs get so high?
To sum up, I think she already was a bit kind of people skirting that like novelty thing, even though, like I said, initially critics were putting their money on her having more staying power. And then she did all this rock and wrestling connection stuff where she like, where like Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper were like fighting over her, and like Lou Albano was like her manager, and she got like really into the wrestling world. And in retrospect, that actually seems really friggin' cool. And you can find these old specials on YouTube and stuff. But I do remember at the time people were like, what are you doing? And I actually think her credibility went down. And MTV was completely on board. They were airing these specials. But I think that was the thing. But she did win Best New Artist that year. She won it over Sheely, the Judds, Corey Hart, and someone you care a lot about, John. Frankie Goes to Hollywood. She beat Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Damn.
It was a tough year.
It had to be 85, right?
Yeah, the best Grammys that were in like February of 85.
U.S. Yeah, of course, you know, which is just speaks to the Grammys 2 years too late. She came out in 83, so it says something you need to know about the Grammys.
Yeah, I actually do vaguely remember when she won. I say this with no shade. I do vaguely remember when she won, already thinking like she was kind of not over, but that she had peaked. And yeah. But now she means so much to me. And I completely think she's a diva, because, you know, divas can be many things. Let's move on to someone that we've already mentioned that I know is really near and dear to our hearts. And that's Kylie Minogue. Now, Rod, I know, because, you know, you've worked with Jake Shears. Jake Shears is on your record Fun City, and Jake Shears is in tight with Kylie and has played with her and stuff. Have you ever crossed paths with Kylie or collaborated with her in any way?
Yeah, loosely. So I did a show in 2016 or 2015. I honestly can't remember. COVID feels like 25 years itself. I did a show in Hyde Park, which was on a like kind of festival, two-stage festival. And it was me, Years and Years, Chic, Grace Jones, and Kylie Minogue.
Holy shit.
So yeah, we were all backstage. We weren't together, but we were like, you know, in little Winnebago things, very close to each other. Didn't actually say hi or anything, like, you know, people doing their own thing. But that was, we were on a bill together. Wow. I did produce a demo for her for the last album, but then they changed it and it went country. So all of those songs got scrapped, which is a shame because it was a really gorgeous song. I didn't write it, just produced it. But to date, no official collaboration.
Well, let's talk about her 80s output. Obviously, I think probably her more glory years were after the 80s in terms of like the critical respect or whatever. But I mean, you know, when we're talking about someone who people maybe didn't think would have staying power, I will admit when The Locomotion came out and she was the actress from Neighbors, I'm not going to say I was like this. I'll be seeing her at the Hollywood Bowl in 2011. Like that did not cross my mind. I did not take her seriously, but she obviously made like an incredible transition through the 90s. She had this like weird 90s, almost like kind of indie rock phase where she, you know, did the song with Nick Cave and she had like guys from Manic Street Preachers, like producing her album Impossible Princess, which is a really weird blip in her, not weird in a bad way, but just definitely an anomaly in her discography. But yeah, I guess I thought she'd kind of end up more like Samantha Fox. Let's talk about how she went from being kind of this, you know, actress who soap opera actress trying to take a stab at a pop career to being like one of the greatest divas of all time, in my opinion.
The UK made out with Kylie, literally. I mean, she was huge. We missed out US wise. We got Locomotion, you know, number 8 hit. I Should Be So Lucky, probably one of her best songs of that era, was not a hit here.
But Rod's from the UK, so what insight do you have into? She's like absolutely the queen over there.
She is probably, I would say, the most loved pop star that the UK cherishes. Mm-hmm. She was so huge in the 80s. Like, people just fell in love with her. Completely fell in love with her. Like, loved every single song. All the singles up until the early 90s were all like top 10, if not close to number one. People just loved her. She was so friendly and so nice and so smiley and so warm. She was like, you know, she was like a kind of sex symbol-ish, but like for like really like vanilla people. if that doesn't sound really harsh, she wasn't overly sexualized, but she was really cute and she was very attractive. Mm-hmm. So they had like the right level of sex appeal so that it didn't seem challenging like Madonna did.
It's not an insult to say she was non-threatening. I mean, that was really a compliment to her.
It's a big compliment, but men are basic. So, you know, like men in the 80s were really, and the 90s, and straight men today still baffle me in that they are ruffled by strong females, you know? Mm-hmm. She had the right balance where she could be like the teen pinup and like the kind of early 20s, like sort of like safe fantasy, I think. And she had the Neighbors connection. So she was like the girl next door, but like the girl that you kind of had the hots for. The songs were absolutely amazing. Like all of those Stock Aitken Waterman hits, Stock Aitken Waterman, that their hit songs for her were just perfect, you know, perfect pop songs on the radio, like absolutely all the time. She was in every magazine about music. She nailed it. They really captured the UK for like most of that decade, and from the first single until, you know, the weird indie album, which did throw people a lot.
Impossible Princess.
Yeah. So just before that, like, I think it was, Word Is Out was the album where people started being weird about Kylie in the UK, where she left Stock Aitken Waterman, PWL, and did other stuff. It was a great record, but didn't have the kind of immediate bubblegum pop hits. So people didn't really know what was happening. And then there was the Nick Cave song, and she was dating Michael Hutchence. And then she made like a weird indie, half techno, half like Manic Street Preachers record and the song with Toa Tay called German Bold Italic, and people were just like, what is happening? But yeah, Kylie 80s, absolute icon, absolute diva, pop princess. She was basically like the Princess Diana of the music world. And that's not even an exaggeration.
What's your go-to? Is she someone that ends up in your DJ sets? And if so, what songs do you play?
I do tend to play more modern Kylie, I think. So I play, my favorite album of hers is Light Years, which was 2000 or 2001. So like Spinning Around on a Night Like This. From the 80s, I would play Hand on Your Heart. Mm-hmm. Not I Should Be So Lucky. Like early 90s, like Shocked, What Do I Have to Do? Oh my God, just like you could pick anything. If I'm DJing in the UK, I could pick anything from her debut single up until, you know, two albums ago, and pretty much same reaction.
Because it sort of ties into another someone that I would consider a diva, and also definitely had that Girl Next Door appeal that made her America's sweetheart for a while. Did you know that Spinning Around was co-written by Paula Abdul?
Yes.
Well, of course you knew that, but maybe people listening did not know. So,
do you know what? What was even weirder, when Kylie had the comeback and Spinning Around went to number one, people were like, oh, didn't see that coming. Even more so, people like Paula Abdul co-wrote that, and everyone was like, what?
Apparently the song was originally supposed to be for her. I'm not exactly sure like why it ended up being given to Kylie instead. But Paula, again, going back to what I was saying, she's a diva, not because she's a great singer, but, you know, when you think about her visual influence in the late 80s with 100%. Forever Your Girl. Yeah. I mean, she not just with her own stuff, like the Cold Hearted, Fosse-esque video, or like Opposites Attract, or all of her videos straight
Janet
up.
Janet Jackson.
The Janet Jackson stuff. I mean, she choreographed those videos from Control. Yeah. I actually interviewed Paula once where she said she choreographed the video for, I don't remember if it was the video for Control or What Have You Done For Me, but one of those videos. She was still a Laker girl at the time, and she was living as a roommate in an apartment with two other Laker girls. She did all the choreography in like the kitchen in front of a full-length mirror. She didn't have any space. The kitchen was like the best place to go. She had all that choreography in front of the mirror. She also choreographed Torture by the Jacksons. Not maybe her best work, but you know, she did that.
But so she had to work with the Michael Jackson mannequin.
She did. The wax dummy.
He's famously not in the video. It's a mannequin standing there for you.
Wild.
But I mean, you know, dance videos obviously in the 80s were a big deal. Madonna, you know, was a huge part of that. But I think if you're thinking about the two artists, the MTV female diva icons that like kind of, besides Madonna, that personified the look of dance on MTV, it was Paula and it was, of course, Janet. I mean, Janet. Yeah. You know, staying power wise, like, you know, it's her discography is a little, you know, weightier, shall we say, a little stronger. But let's talk a little bit about Paula, because I do think she had that, like, that Girl Next Door thing. She was real small. She like danced mm-hmm. with a cartoon cat. She was like cute. She's very pretty, but she wasn't threatening, I guess.
She had the Kylie appeal, I think. Like, if you put her and Kylie next to each other, they're like Trojan horses where people think of them as very unassuming, and you look and they're like, oh, that's a nice girl. And then it's like, boom, there's the talent. And you're like, oh, Christ. I think like if you looked at Paula, people would not assume that she had that choreography talent in her and the ability to, like, she didn't write the hits from her debut album, but she is also a songwriter. So there's so much more going on behind I laugh because the photography on the back of that debut album is just so grotesque. It looks like, you know, theater school headshots. It really breaks my heart, honestly. But she does look very happy. It's an incredible record. I love the album. And she is absolutely a diva and an icon. Like, I love Paula Abdul. But she did have that, you know, like, unassuming, sweet girl thing, which disarms the kind of, like, basic bros, I guess. And she just broke the charts.
I do also want to say, since a lot of people don't, you know, they might know or assume that she choreographed her own videos. A lot of people probably know that she choreographed a lot of Jant videos, like What Have You Done For Me, Control. She did One I Think of You, but she choreographed the Coming to America wedding sequence. She was the choreographer. She was the choreographer for George Michael's Faith Tour. She choreographed a couple different award show things, like the Under the Sea performance from Little Mermaid on the Oscars. She choreographed, obviously, like I said, her own videos. There's a couple other. Oh, she choreographed the dance scene at FAO Schwartz in Big.
Did she? Oh my God.
Yeah. So she, like, you know, maybe, and that's why people have to remember when she went on American Idol, when they were first coming up with American Idol in 2002, she was the star of that panel. It was not Randy Jackson. He was a behind the scenes guy. It was not Simon Cowell, who obviously became the star, but she was the star power. And it was because of that. And she didn't really get taken seriously on that show. But when she did, was later a judge on So You Think You Could Dance, she like knew her shit. So like, you know, I'm not going to say she's a Whitney Houston style singer, but you know, mad respect for the choreography. Okay, I can see how the way this conversation is going. We are going to have to totally make this a two-parter. So thanks again today to our special guest, Rod Thomas, a.k.a. Bright Light. Bright Light, I can extend an invitation for you to join us for part two. That's a nod. That's a yes. All right.
This is a definite yes.
Awesome. We'll see you then. I'm Lindsay Parker. I've been joined today by the other John Hughes, and we want to thank you for listening. Remember to give us a rate and review on your favorite podcast platform, and we'll catch you next time.
This was Totally 80s, the podcast dedicated to the music of the greatest decade ever. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Totally 80s, and please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Until our next episode, catch you on the flip side.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.